Welcome to episode 9 of Inside the Rebels. This is the bye week edition. That means we are taking our time getting it to you, doing a little bit late due to some scheduling conflicts. I'm Joe Rigo. Along with me, as always, is the man with the plan, Jonathan Von Tovel, JVT. What's going on, brother?
What's up, man?
Trick or treat.
How did that go?
It was sweet.
Because you got kids, so did you go?
They're all teenagers, 17, 16, 15, pretty
much. So this is a perfect topic. So they're too old for you to go trick-or-treating, or do they feel like they're too old?
No, they love going trick-or-treating.
Oh, so they went then?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
See, well, I take that back. Peanut didn't.
Okay.
He came home from football practice,
yeah,
and he crashed.
Okay.
And he was to like 8:30. Then he got up, grabbed the bag, ran out for like 20 minutes, and came back
in. See, that's fine, because they're young enough, right? My thing with Halloween, with trick-or-treating, and Steve gave me some crap for this, is I thought there should be a maximum age, at least like high school. Once you're a senior in high school, all right, you're done. You're an adult. You're an adult, whatever. No, but I'm soft on that cap. I don't know exactly where that should end, right?
Right.
But this is my big one. There's got to be a minimum, because these parents that roll up with the infants that are like 3 months old, right, and the baby can't eat the candy and he's not going to remember anything, and the parents are like, oh, trick or treat. And then, like, at the house I was at, my girlfriend's aunt's house, they were giving out full-size candy bars.
Where was that at? I need to go there.
Yeah, up in Desert Shores.
Okay.
So a full-size Snickers for a 3-month-old kid. He's going to eat that, huh? Like, no. So there's got to be a minimum age to know.
So, like, 1 year old.
Yeah, because these parents are just going to get free candy.
What if they have teeth?
That was my thing. Is if they have teeth, then they're good.
Okay.
Because you know they're going to eat it. But these parents who are taking out, like, 3-month-olds who just, like, still have, like, the shrivelly lizard fingers and everything, like, no, that's ridiculous. You're just trying to get free candy. I would accept you dressing up and then coming. I'd rather have that.
We had that. We had a couple adults come. One was dressed up as a family, though. The baby was dressed up as Pooh Bear.
Yeah.
The dad, Tigger, and the mom, Eeyore.
Exactly. How old was the baby?
About 2.
Okay.
I mean, but in a stroller.
That's
you know
okay.
what I mean? But then we had another group of people come, mm-hmm. and they were just straight adults trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
I mean, in their 40s.
Okay, see, that's not okay.
I didn't care.
Oh, see, I'd be like, nah, get out of here.
We had a bunch of candy left. So I was like, here, just go. Yeah, take it.
Nah, I'd be like, nah, go.
It's for the kids. What's funny is I have a real close friend of mine, right? They just had a baby, my boy Rob Dizzle.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob has, literally, the baby is a week and a half old.
Mm-hmm.
So when they brought him home, I call him the little shark, because that's his crew, the sharks, right?
Yeah.
They had a little shark in actually the bucket of candy. Like, they laid him in there as they're passing out the candy.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's a picture. I think he tweeted it out. It was pretty bad.
All right, see, that's good. But as long as they don't take it trick-or-treating, I'm fine. But other than that,
Halloween was good.
Halloween was solid.
Halloween was good for us, too. I dressed up like Tony Sanchez.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I threw on some I left my slides on, but I had some black warm-ups and then a UNLV jacket, and my hair already was short.
It looks like it.
And then, you know, the goatee,
mm-hmm.
and put on some sunglasses and was like, hey, come on. Hey, let's go.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bull call. Oh.
Loves the word bullshit.
Yeah, loves it.
Yeah.
I got you cursing again.
Yeah, I actually went out and bleeped out those other ones, because I know this is for a professional website, so I bleeped that out. Yeah. Can't do that.
That was great.
My mentality has taken a bye week.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So did theirs in the first half.
No, it was ridiculous.
Man, the first half was so brutal. Mm-hmm. The cooler was just cold. He fell into a cooler.
He's been cold.
Yeah. It's not a good look for him. But I'll say this about Dalton Sneed. Looking at him on the sideline, he was engaged the whole game. He was mm-hmm. with his teammates, rallying around him.
That was actually one of the more impressive things that I saw was when I flipped on the game at first, it was in the second quarter,
uh-huh.
and it shows the sideline, and there's Dalton Sneed giving out hand signals. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? What is he doing? And then, you know, obviously you see Kurt Palahniuk, then I go back and watch, and, you know, he got replaced. And this just goes to your point, is that he was in the game the whole time despite being pulled, and that's really a big positive for a kid who's probably going to be like a backup or a role player next year.
He's a glue guy.
Yeah.
And I love Dalton Sneed as a person. I think he can be effective as a quarterback at times, you know. And is he a guy to lead you to a national championship? No. Is he going to lead you to a big bowl game? No.
Mm-hmm.
But can he lead you to maybe the Las Vegas Bowl or the Heart of the Dallas Bowl or whatever? Yeah, I think he could, you know, provided the talents around him.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a guy that needs people around him to make him better versus him making other people better.
Okay.
And that led to my tweet, which was, and it was more of a rhetorical question, and I know I got a lot of people responding to it, which was, do you play Armani at this point? You know, I mean, you still have a chance to win 6 games, squeak into a bowl possibly.
No.
He's the best quarterback on the roster to me right now, mm-hmm. bar none.
Well, he has been since the beginning.
Yeah, but I mean, and I agree. I mean, as I said, we talked about it in a past podcast that right now you can't.
Only three games left. It makes absolutely no sense to do it. Yeah.
And I know he wants to get in.
How many people said yes?
A couple, but more. I'll give eight.
I think those are the same people who I know will get into it. Those are the same people who want Tony Sanchez fired.
You're actually wrong.
Really?
Yeah, you're actually wrong. There's just some people that are like, yeah, let's just get him in and let him. We want to win some games. He would have helped us beat San Jose State, you know, and they are anti-Palandek. And yeah, he played okay, but Armani would have done more. And I was just like, okay, you know, and I don't disagree with that, you know. I'm not the biggest Palandek fan, but I'll give credit where credit is due. Up until that last pass, he really played a really good game from being inserted off the bench into the game.
Mm-hmm. But again, when it comes to Armani, sorry, that ship has sailed long ago. I think
should've
it's
sailed.
Been after Idaho. Yeah, that's exactly what we talked about. If it should have been. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I thought Johnny got injured the week before. See, my mentality is just gone. But no, it should have been a lot earlier. But as far as Palandek goes, again, it's kind of like the same point, and I feel like a record, but it's the same thing that's kind of been there this whole entire season when it comes to the quarterback position. And it's, if you take care of the football, the team is relatively successful. And Palandek came in and did that, like you mentioned, up until that last pass, where it was kind of bad.
It was horrible. It was brutal. When I watched it, right?
Yeah.
I'm down. I left upstairs. My wife wanted to watch TV, so I went downstairs and started watching. You know, I picked up. It was like the fourth quarter, midway through the third, and I'm sitting there and I'm eating Tommy's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, honestly, Tommy's on Craig.
What is Tommy? Oh, okay. All
okay,
right.
So my wife right before halftime goes, "Can you go grab some Tommy's? I'm hungry." And I'm like, "I am too." Okay, cool.
Mm.
Went snagged some Tommy's, came back. Actually, on the way back, was listening to Mitch on their broadcast, because I was like, I missed like the first series.
Pritch, you mean?
Yeah, Pritch. Yeah. My bad. The second time I did it.
Yeah, it rhymes.
I text Pritch, and I said, "Hey, Mitch." And I didn't mean to do that. And he was like, "You mean Pritch?" I'm like, "Oh, my bad, bro."
Yeah.
But, so I listening to Pritch and listen to the first series. I get home, give her food, go downstairs, rewatching the game, and get caught up. And was like, okay. And I'm downstairs, and when he threw the pick, I threw my remote.
Not really.
Because I'm like, because I seen what they were going to do. They had Johnny warming up to throw the Hail Mary, which was the smart thing to do.
Yep.
You were driving down. He had a guy wide open across the middle if he would have just thrown the check down.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he wanted to try to force it deeper. You don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Not at that point in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, get yourself in a manageable position. And that's been my fear with Palandek, and that's what I've been told by various people is, you know, when the bullet starts flying and the game gets tough, you know, you can't trust him.
I think it's got to – but that's kind of unfair to a point. I mean, he came in with a big deficit and he brought them back.
He was
granted,
a part of it, yeah.
Granted, the last play, he made a big mistake, but he did have a big hand in leading them back to
– but
to a point where they could actually make a play and
okay,
come back.
Okay, but if you're down by that much, really what pressure is on you?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he deserves credit for getting them to
absolutely.
That point.
Yeah. He deserves – yeah, he does that when he scrambled out the pocket and scored. That was a hell of a play. He made a beautiful pass to Price.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he got Boyd more involved, but I think that's another problem they have. Devontae's had some egregious drops.
Yeah.
I mean, he's dropped some balls that –
definitely taking a step down this year.
Big time.
But then again, look at the position that's getting him the ball. I mean, how much does it have to do with it? But you're right. He does have a lot of drops this year, some really questionable ones. You're like, man, you know, you should probably snag that. But how much does it play into the fact that he's had three different signal callers and he doesn't really know exactly what he's going to get every single week?
I don't think that plays a big role,
but it does play a little bit, I think.
I don't. You know, I'm going to be honest. He's had all spring and all the practice to work with all these guys. It's not like Dalton when he's the one who's just throwing to Devontae, or Johnny's just throwing to Devontae, or Kurt or Armani, whomever, is just throwing to Devontae when they're running with the ones or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally, you know, a rotation. Whoever you get. You know what you get with Palandek. You know what you get with Stanton. You've had them long enough. And now you had Snead for, what, 3-4 games. You know what you're getting with Dalton. There's passes thrown to him that he's on a simple out route, and he just drops it. And it's like, dude, you're an NFL. You are the best receiver in the Mountain West going into the season. You're an NFL caliber receiver. You have the ability to play on Sundays. You can't drop these balls. Like, you're hurting your own draft stock. Now, if you're a UNLV fan, you kind of – it's a double-edged sword. It's bittersweet. Keep dropping him because you're going to stay one more year, hopefully.
Hopefully.
You know, and if he doesn't, he's making a huge mistake, too.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to an NFL scout, and he said – he goes, you know, if going into the season, we had him as, like, the fifth or sixth round type guy. Right now, he's not drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to come back, and he can probably get to between the third and the fifth round, you know, depending on the type of year he has next year.
Third round's pretty high.
But they feel he's that he has that type of ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they feel he's better than a lot of other receivers that are there, but he's just too inconsistent, they said. So I just look at it from this standpoint. At the end of the day, he needs to step up and make them plays. He is that type of guy that can and should make those plays. But back to Palahniuk, you know, it's not – he had the type of game that I thought, okay, I can see why they're going to start him against Wyoming,
mm-hmm.
which Tony came out and said the other day that he was going to be the guy with, I think, Johnny backing him up, and then Dalton's going to be in the three spot. I don't know how realistic that is, unless if Johnny is super close. If Johnny's that close, why not just start him?
Yeah, but he's done this before, right? I mean, look at the first game. Johnny was the starter. Kurt was the backup.
Right, and he went to Dalton.
And then Dalton was the third string guy, but then when he had to put somebody in for a play, who went out there was Dalton. So he's done this before, so I don't really think the quarter – like, the actual listing for Tony doesn't really mean much to me.
So two means three and three means two?
Yeah, on some days. That's the thing. He's been really kind of – when it comes to at least labeling them, he's been kind of up and down. You don't really know exactly. There's been weeks where he said, Kurt's definitely going to get in the mix, and then we never saw Kurt come out at all. So, I mean, there was a lot of stuff – when he talks about – at least your depth chart, I wouldn't put a whole lot of weight on it.
Yeah. Because
he's shown he's not really going to stick to it.
Well, I don't blame him. Not with what's there right now. That's what's available right now, I should say.
Yeah, of course. But, yeah, I mean, like, and then again, of course, I mean, that's what my question was when it comes to all this, and this is kind of a weird topic, but, like, the first week when you had it listed that way, and then all of a sudden it was like, well, you know, Kurt wasn't really ready, so that's why we went in Dalton. Well, then why do you label him the three? And this looks like the exact same scenario. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I never really considered that or thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that it was more, you know, well, just in case we need somebody mm-hmm. like we can trust, we'll go to Kurt at the two at that mm-hmm. time, going back to week one.
Mm-hmm.
But no one really, they kept the shoulder injury under wraps.
Well, and he's mentioned multiple times that Johnny's going to have a procedure after the season on his knee.
Yeah.
So I think. And part of the thing was when you asked him the question after the Colorado State game, what was the thing? Is he's a Mayday guy, and he can't run the same offense like Snead or Palahniuk can when it comes to the read option. He can't run the ball, really.
Right.
So I think he's another emergency guy. If Palahniuk comes out and struggles, I'm not sure that we would see Johnny if he's really that limited and he's already planning on having a surgical procedure on his knee.
And I'd be very leery going into the Wyoming game, and we'll probably could talk more about that next week because their defense is so good.
What I tell you, I've been preaching this since the beginning.
You have. You're right. I was wrong.
Yeah.
You're smart. I'm dumb.
See, I gave myself a pat on the back on Twitter. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I actually retweeted it.
Yeah,
retweeted it.
Because Tony, or not Tony, Taylor's been, Taylor Byrne, the Las Vegas Sun. He's been.
Formerly of the Las Vegas Sun.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, we'll get into that. No, actually, we won't get into that. Taylor doesn't like when we talk about it. Was going to say, though. Oh, you know, Taylor was just kind of like, you know, the week's coming up. He's like smirking at me like, okay, sure, all right. And then when they get that safety at the end, I'm like, let me dig this tweet up real quick. Let me see if I can find it.
Well, again, Boise State at home is a completely different team. That's what I've banged that drum for mm-hmm. a few weeks. They play slower. It's not the fast of tempo. They've kind of reversed course from what they've done. So – you know, I'll say this. When it comes to the quarterback situation at UNLV, it's almost to the point with the last three games where when one of the last three get that fourth win, get one more win than you had last year.
Yeah, that's the objective at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And feel good about what your depth going into next year. But I'll say this, and I said this at the beginning of the year, UNLV is going to win some games that they shouldn't win. And they're going to lose games that they shouldn't lose. They've lost more games they shouldn't have, you know, they should have won than what I anticipated, and I think even what you anticipated. I thought they'd at least split between Colorado State and San Jose State.
They're right about where I thought they would be. I mean, because I thought 6 wins was the ceiling. I thought that was the absolute ceiling for the team. So, I mean, if they win 4, they're right about where I think you thought they would be. I thought probably 5. I think at the beginning of the year on Kofi and the Cover, my choice was 5. The total was 4.5 at the beginning.
Right.
So I took the over because I thought 5 was plausible. But you go back and look at the schedule, Idaho was one of those. And I think now that we're looking, I mean, that game, you're going to look back once the season's over and you're going to ask what could have been, because if you win that game and then let's say you win just one more, so obviously if they finish before this year, I mean, that's a potential 5-win season. I mean, you're going to look back at the Idaho game. That's the one game on the schedule you're going to be like, we could have had something else.
Right. I just – hindsight's 2020.
Mm-hmm. That was a bad loss, man.
Dude, that was horrible. And I think that's Tony's worst loss.
Mm-hmm.
I would go as far as saying that. I think he would go ahead and say that. But what I like about this team is the fight. They never gave up. And there was actually some bright spots regarding this game with San Jose State.
Mm-hmm.
One in particular was Jackson, the corner that they started. Mm-hmm. Big 6'2" corner. I rewatched the game. I rewatched it twice. I've punished myself twice. And he actually had a really solid game in coverage. He didn't give any big plays up.
Robert Jackson, number 24, by the way, for those who are wondering.
Yeah, and he's another player that has braids coming out the back of his helmet.
So a Jayon Miles type. Jayon's tiny though.
Yeah, Jayon's like 5. At least that's 5'8".
So Jayon's got the, am I right? Jayon's got the
he's got some
like the ponytail. So he so wraps up the.
So does Devontae.
Yeah, Devontae's got a real ponytail though. I think like just Jayon just what's it called?
Braids.
Yeah, bundles up his braids. I think when he plays.
Yeah, but I'll say
UNLV fashion.
Yeah,
so we pay attention.
The little things. But Jackson had a great game. I mean, he's very physical against the run. He contained. He did. He set the edge. He did everything he needed to do. And then in turn in coverage, he didn't give up the big plays. He was in great position a lot of times. He broke up some balls.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that I'm interested to see what he does the next 3 games going forward. I mean, he's a guy that you could put on the bigger receivers. The weak link in the secondary, I'm just going to say it publicly, is McTyer right now. He hasn't played well all year. Aside from the Jackson State game when he had the pick 6, he really hasn't played well all year. And you know, there was times in this game where I questioned it, whether or not he even wanted to be there. Like, there's a play where he just kind of, like, tried to push a guy out of bounds, didn't even get physical. The big touchdown pass where he and Hawthorne collided, he slowed down for some reason.
Yep.
Got, you know, and then it was a double move. He bit on the double move. I mean, at some point, you pulled Mouton from starting. At some point, will you do that with McTyer? I know he's a senior.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's got the bloodlines. But at some point, why not slide him in and put Mouton back outside? At least Mouton appears to give you an effort.
Or if you don't like Mouton, I mean, we mentioned Jayon Miles.
Yeah.
I mean, he could go out there and start as well. I mean, he's been playing a lot, at least when it comes to nickel spots and things like that. You see him out there, especially when they go 4 wide. But, I mean, the secondary has always been kind of the weak link. And
Hawthorne had trouble covering again.
When it comes to McTyer, too, I've noticed, and I don't know if you'll agree with it, but he has trouble on the deep balls. But it's the underneath routes that he's always – you see him, he just flies in and he'll try to break
exactly.
up a pass. I mean, he's really great at filling in on those short routes, but like you mentioned in that one play, he bit on the double move because it looks like he's just like full mile, like 100 miles an hour. All right, I'm going to just break this up. And that leads him to bite on those sometimes.
Why? And this may sound kind of out the box thinking, because I don't like saying there's a problem and not have a solution. Why not move McTyer to a free safety spot where he can cover the underneath stuff, and you move Hawthorne into like that linebacker's hybrid safety role, since he's better against the run anyway versus the pass. I mean, against Colorado State, they ran that little pick play in the end zone, a little rub route almost. And he completely bit on the play action and left his guy alone in the corner, and the guy caught the ball for the touchdown. Last week he undercut the ball, didn't get to the receiver, and next thing you know, he hits McTyer. The guy catches it and scores.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to undercut the route, you better damn sure pick it off. I mean, honestly, that's the rule. If you undercut it, you better pick it or knock the ball down. He undercut it and went over the top of him. You know, that to me, that's an issue to me. Mm-hmm. And I may be one of the few. And I'm not throwing these kids under the bus. And I hope nobody takes it that way. But if we're going to be critical, you know, we got to do our jobs. We have to be critical. Not everything is sunshine and roses.
Media is not critical.
Yeah. And I get told that. Oh, you're such a Tony homer. You're such a... I believe in what Tony's doing. Mm-hmm. I see there's a process. There's steps. This is step two. Step one was last year, getting his guys. Step two is now you're in a position to where you have to set the expectations realistically, and you have to have the guys buy in, and he's done that. Mm-hmm. Now it's just getting more of the talent, getting more of your guys in there versus doing it with somebody else's guys.
So before we get into that topic, because that's a pretty deep topic, what did you think of the defensive performance overall? Because in the first half, I'm watching it, and it's just four-man rush, looks like zone coverage, four-man rush, four-man rush, four-man rush, and it's like Potter's over there picking them apart. At some point, are we going to send some pressure? Because the four-down linemen can't generate pressure on their own. They haven't been able to really throughout the season. They did a little bit against Central Michigan, but it's kind of been absent.
Right.
Second half, looks like they start bringing more pressure more often, and what happens? UNLV crawls back into the game, and the defense actually start performing better.
We've said all year that they need to get pressure, need to start hitting quarterbacks, and that's something that, you know, when they're playing well, that's what they're doing. Mm. You know, they're blitzing more. I don't see why they don't do it more often. But that's also something I look at, too. They've done a really good job in the second half adjusting in games. You know, that's something that a lot of teams struggle with. So they made that adjustment where they started blitzing more in the second half. I like that. If they do that more often, and let your guys just go out and play. I mean, you could even play zone with
– But my issue is like, this is the second game in a row. You realize that, right? Like, you talk about second half adjustments.
Maybe they don't respect the passing game.
In the first half of Colorado State, right? In the first half of Colorado State, they got off to a slow start. Defense wasn't playing well. They make some adjustments. What happens? Second half, defense actually comes out and allows the offense to score 17 straight points.
Right.
I mean, and I know a lot of that had to do with the offense actually not being able to stay on the field. But at the same time, it's at what point can we start to expect to not have these slow starts and you have to have a hole to climb out of?
Well, I think you should start that expectation now, mm-hmm. or you should have already had it. And I think some people do, and I think that's the frustrating part, because they see when they're getting pressure, they see when they're doing what they're supposed to do, and they're playing to their strengths, how efficient and effective they can be. I can't say good, but how effective they can be. And really, in some cases, how good they can play. When they're not, they fall back to being, you know, going down, being down 17-3 or 24-10 going into halftime, and it's like, now you got to fight uphill. Mm. Now you got to fight this uphill battle.
You don't have the offense circling back. You don't have the offense to do that.
You don't have the trigger man for the offense to do that. At least you're not playing the trigger man to do it right now. Look, everybody, and it goes back to, you know, it says it goes back to the quarterback position. You have to have a quarterback to win at any level. And you look at teams now. I mean, you look at UCLA. Without Rosen, they're garbage. I mean, they weren't great with Rosen.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
But they were better than what they are.
Yeah.
You know, look at Notre Dame. There's another good example. Kaiser is a guy they're talking about going number one overall at one point, and they have two wins all year.
Mm.
You know, USC was struggling with Max Brown, who, by the way, is not on the list to come to UNLV, even though SC is allowing him to transfer. Can dead that rumor right now. He's not looking at UNLV. He's going somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, with what you got waiting in the wings, I don't really think you want to go after him.
Exactly, and it goes back to that. Now you have, you know, I'm worried about this. The pressure and the expectations for Armani is going to be so immense that anything less than a bowl next year is a failure in some people's minds. In some people's minds. Maybe not yours.
In some people's minds, yes, but I think, again, they're the same people who are wanting Tony Sanchez fired right now. I think if you're realistic, like if he comes out and if he has more touchdowns than interceptions, if he's, let's just, let's throw out some numbers. Let's just go with 15 passing touchdowns. Let's throw in five on the ground. And he plays the whole entire season. They win five games, and they're competitive in every single one. I think everyone's going to be like, okay, first year under the belt, redshirt freshman, like second or a fourth year under Tony Sanchez, second year under him. When these receivers are growing, they'll all be sophomores, juniors again. Offensive line will be solid again. I think then people will be realistic when it comes to the year, you know, that year. But there are going to be some people who like are the same right now, who want Tony Sanchez fired and who want this, this, and that, when the program's never been that.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up. Again, the same guy, and I'm going to give out his Twitter handle. Let me pull it up on my phone. Because you know what? It irritates the hell out of me. The only time I hear from this cat is when UNLV is losing and it's, man, Tony sucks. We need to get rid of Tony. You know, and I'm just like
you should just ask him the simple question, who are you going to get instead?
Oh, I did, and there's no response. And that's part of the problem. He's just – it's a trip. The guy is KT in Vegas, Flacco. Also, let me go back. Let me go to Kevin Red, Carpet VIP. This dude constantly – like right here, pathetic. Sanchez proving he's like Al Bundy, peaked in high school. That's the last one. And
what's his handle again?
It's KT in Vegas.
KT
in Vegas. Or it's Kevin Red Carpet VIP.
That's the handle?
Yeah, at Kevin Red Carpet VIP.
Kevin Red Carpet VIP. No results.
Okay, try KT in Vegas.
I'll spell that like separate?
Yeah, separate. And JVT is, there he is, first one.
Kevy Kev?
Is that what it is?
Homeboy?
That's what he looks like, but that's not what I have. Look at here, take my phone. I'm showing JVT. Now,
Kev Red Carpet. Oh, Kev Red Carpet. Yeah, okay.
Now, the thing is this, and I'll address this right now. There is no way.
There we go.
That you're going to let.
Just interested, Kevin, if you're listening.
And I'm not trying to rail you, Kev. I'm just going to be honest. But let's be real, okay? There's no way in hell they're going to fire Tony after he raised basically $17 million for the football complex that the Fertittas were involved in or are involved in. There's no way that money would even be put in because the Fertittas probably wouldn't put in because Tony's their guy.
Yeah.
I don't think the type of recruits that are looking and are committed to UNLV currently would be looking at or even coming to UNLV. Because Tony's a great recruiter. He is winning in spite of the talent that is here currently that are upperclassmen, most of the upperclassmen, in lack of quality depth. That's the reality of it. Now, whether you like it or not, what are your expectations? 12 wins? That's not going to happen. This arguably was the worst football program in the country that Tony has to rebuild from the ground up. This is a project. It's not a slap the makeup on the pig and go on out there, baby. Let's go have some fun. No, it's okay. Here's the foundation. Let's have foundation, guys. Let's build. And within 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, now we're on to something. There's no way you're going to fire him.
Yeah, that was always funny to me when I saw it. It has been crazy. Like on our text line on the station, it's usually the same number that texts, and it's usually the same three or four people that you see on Twitter who are calling for his job. But it's crazy to me to think, and to be honest with you, not to be insulting, but it also kind of makes me feel like you don't know much about college football, considering that you can't revamp a whole entire program like UNLV in just 1 year.
Right.
And like you mentioned, I don't know where this is coming from. 12 wins, is that what you want? I didn't know. Yes, there was excitement. And a lot of people were like, oh, well, we were so excited for what? Because you can see that something's coming. You already mentioned football facility. That is not. You said maybe it doesn't come. That's not coming. That's a fact.
No, it's happening.
That's not happening without Tony Sanchez.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Not happening. 100% fact. It's not happening without Tony Sanchez. Like the stadium, right, and everything like that. I mean, it's probably coming maybe without Tony Sanchez, but the excitement that's going to go into the program when they get a new building, it's not the same if it's another guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? He's already out there pimping for the stadium. When Bobby Houck was here, he never was in the community. Bobby Houck never really got in touch with people. He never really got the fan base excited.
Exactly.
And that was all the complaints were sometimes. And you mentioned recruiting classes. I mean, Bobby never really had talented guys coming, these heralded guys like Tony Sanchez has coming now, or even considering the program. And Bobby wouldn't even – you see now, this is the big difference when it comes to recruiting class. Houck, you wouldn't know who his recruiting classes were until – the actual signing day, and they released the list. Now you see guys on social media, I'm committing to UNLV. You see them photoshopping Rebel uniforms on themselves. That does not happen without Tony Sanchez. And it's amazing when you look at all this happening, when you look at what's coming, and you're like, that needs to be fired.
One of the things that I found interesting is when I first met Tony when I got out here, he goes, you're with scout.com? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, my God, I'm so glad to meet you. Like, I can't wait. You know, you guys do a phenomenal job with the recruits and getting interviews and this and that. And I was like, cool. And I was told by people within the program and people that around town and the prominent people that up until Tony, they didn't want to deal with like a scout.com. They didn't want any of that release. It's like top secret. Why? These kids nowadays aren't like that. You have to release that information. And The reality is this. Tony's a great football coach. He's a great leader of men, of people in general. Am I selling out to him? No. I'm being honest. You can see greatness from a mile away. It don't take a whole day to recognize that sun shines. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, when I see what Tony's doing.
How can you not?
Well, some people don't.
Yeah.
You know, Pretty Flacco or Kev Flacco or whatever. You know, red carpet Kev.
And you mentioned his fundraising and things of that nature. I'm willing to go out on a limb on this. Mark my words. If the Raiders don't work out and that stadium's not built, I'm willing to guarantee that Tony somehow raises $200 million to get their share of the public funds to get a UNLV stadium.
I would agree with that 100%. I mean, and here's the thing. Even the staff. Let's talk about the staff, okay? Mm-hmm. I won't go into position coaches. Let's talk about Kent Bear and Barney Cotton, okay? Kent Bear is a Pac-12 defensive coordinator. When it comes to coaching in general, and really on the defensive side, it goes both sides of the ball, but you're as good as your talent and your players. You could put out the best game plan, but if you have guys that don't execute it or aren't athletic enough or capable of, you know, they've reached their peak athletically and they're not capable of doing it, you get what you get.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start getting your guys in there, now you have something. And Kent does a really good job. I mean, there's injuries. There's a lot of inconsistencies, and they are young. I mean, there are some vets on that defensive side of the ball, but for the most part, there's a lot of young guys out there getting playing time on both sides. You're going to get inconsistencies because they're young. Kent's not going anywhere. Barney's not going anywhere. I mean, Coach Cotton, again, this guy is coached at some Power 5 conferences as a coordinator. The offense isn't a bad – it's not bad. It's bad because it's the trigger man. They don't have the trigger man playing right now because they have a bigger goal in mind, you know. And then, you know, doesn't help that Lex twists an ankle and he misses most of the game. You know, doesn't help that you have three of your starting four receivers going into the year injured. You know, it doesn't help that your starting quarterback to start the season is out and he's going to be playing, you know – hurt the rest of the way when or if he comes back to play.
And also, I mean, he's not exactly what they expected. And you know, you could put that on the coaching staff as well as, well, maybe you scouted them out wrong. That's fine. You could still criticize while also saying, hey, they deserve to stick around.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It's okay to be critical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people think that when you're not being critical and you're just talking about all the good things and the fun and, oh, they're so great and this is going to be great, and then when things get bad, it's like, oh, they suck. No, there's ups and downs in this roller coaster ride. You can be critical because you want to see them get better.
Mm.
I want to see UNLV get better. I know you do. You're an alum. You want to see your school get better. I cover them. It's good for business for me. It's good for business for you.
Mm.
For ESPN, for scout.com, it's great for business. I want to see them get better. Plus, it's exciting for this city. I mean, to be in a city – where your football team, your college football team, is kicking ass, it's a phenomenal feeling. It is so much fun. Going to the games, you know, it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling, and I would love for UNLV fans in the city of Las Vegas to feel it.
Well said, Joe.
I'm sorry. I'm you can't fire Tony. Well, it's not even stupid.
All that aside, you don't fire a guy after a second year when the program's been garbage. Like, that's literally the simplest way to put it.
Yeah.
You don't fire a guy after his second year when the program's been garbage since the 80s. I'm sorry, you don't. That's the simplest point. And like I said, if you want to fire, then I don't think you know football, at least college football, that well.
If you want him fired,
NFL. You can't flip it in a season.
If you want him fired, I want you to email insidetherebels@gmail.com and give me your plan.
I want three candidates.
Yeah, three candidates, legitimate candidates, not Lane Kiffin, Pete Carroll, and Mike McCarthy or Sean Payton.
Trust me, people say it.
Well, no, it's got to be legitimate
candidates. We got a stadium coming. You know, we got a football facility coming. They'll want a coach here. It's Las Vegas. The Raiders are coming. No.
No.
Because, you know what? To be honest with you, what? If they fire Tony Sanchez, you're going to get Tim DeRuiter?
No, he wouldn't come. I can tell you that he wouldn't come.
He would get a pay cut. He was making, what, 1.2, 1.3 over
exactly.
There?
Exactly.
He's going to get, what, Tony makes, $400,000?
I'm not talking about another exactly. man's money. I stay out of people's pockets.
No, I think that's about what he makes. But, like, come on, people.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that is going to happen. And I'll say this. I'll go on a limb. I don't know anything. By the end of next year, Tony's going to get an extension.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it's going to be, I would say, a five-year extension.
Was the original deal 4 or 5 years?
I think it was 4.
Okay.
I'll be a 5-year extension, and I would say it'll be about $6.75 million. Over $1 million a year.
I don't think so. I agree with the extension. I don't think the cost.
Because what's going to be considered is the money for all the fundraising money that he's brought in, mm-hmm. not to mention the stadium with that happening. I think they're going to end up breaking bread for him.
They'll break bread, but UNLV breaking bread is like $700,000. It's not going to be over $1 million. I'll put a bet on that one if you want.
I don't gamble. But let's say there's escalators. 700,000 year one and topside of 1.135 year five. But if he gets to a bowl, the bonus is 300,000 year one.
Yeah, maybe. That's just a lot of money for this program. Like I said, they're $3 million. They're going to be $3 million in the red at some point in this coming year.
It depends if they get the apparel deal. Because I know the apparel deal with Nike's coming up. And I've never touched on this, I don't think, on the show. I've heard rumblings that Under Armour is looking at them for a 10-year, $100 million deal for all sports.
Yeah, I mentioned that in one of the first episodes.
Okay,
yeah.
So you figure $10 million a year, there's that $3 million gone. That's $7 million right there.
We'll see.
We'll see, but I think he'll get a 5-year extension by the end of next year.
Oh, he'll get an extension for sure.
You know, and I think it's deserved.
Yeah,
I really do. I mean, he's well respected in coaching circles, and I really think that at the end of the day, you get what you pay for. And right now, UNLV has a huge bargain in Tony Sanchez. Yeah.
Do you watch basketball?
I wasn't there. I didn't make it.
Were
to
they
the
streaming
game.
It or what?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I didn't see it, but I listened to it.
Yeah.
I listened to it. I was at a youth football practice, and I was I had my headphone in, and I was listening to them. What did you think about it? I know you were there.
Yeah, I was there. It's cool to see him back on the floor. It's very interesting because of the overhaul. Just trying to remember all these names and put faces to names and everything like that. Because when Marvin holds open practices, it's right when Cofield and company starts, so I never really get to go and watch practice. Tell you one thing right off the bat, Chris Clyburn looks like the real deal.
That's the big recruit, right?
No, that's the JUCO transfer. He's about, I want to say, like 6'4". He's a wing guy. The first 4 minutes had 4 points, 6 rebounds. Just constantly attacking passing lanes. Had 5 steals on the night. Four of them turned into fast break points for him. I mean, he finished with a double-double. It was 22, 24 points, 11 rebounds. Yeah, 10 boards. Something around there.
Yeah.
Offensively, they look decent.
What about the Slovakian kid?
Dude, Georgi Slavonchin did not play at all.
What?
I was pissed. I came to that game to watch Georgi, man.
Hey, I think we should start start a Slovak. What is, I call him the Slovakian.
Yeah.
Let's start.
Is
let's,
he even from there?
I don't know.
Okay, I was going to say.
Sounds like it, though.
Just a lot of J's and I's and Z's and consonants or consonants next to consonants. Is that the word?
And like three vowels in the whole name.
It's crazy.
It's like the U and the U and the E's.
When
in
you
there.
Actually pronounce it, it looks more complicated than it really is. It's the pronunciation is Georgi Slavonchinin.
Slavonchinin.
Yeah, okay. Georgi. And yeah, just think Georgi.
Okay, well, I think we start a big Georgi fan club.
Oh, trust me, I'm already in. Like, I was sitting there in the media section. I was the whole time, I'm like, where's Georgi? He comes in the final 30 seconds. Like, it was like 6 seconds. No, I think it was like 1.6 seconds left in the first half. They put him in, so, you know, to avoid foul trouble.
Right.
And I'm like, come on, man. You can't put him out there. And then he gets, obviously finishes out to 1.6 in the first half and then comes back in the game with, I think, I don't even think there was a minute left on the clock. Pulled
that
down
sucks.
Two rebounds in a minute, though. Come on, man.
That's
two rebounds in 1 minute.
Efficiency.
Play.
Efficiency. Exactly. That's what you look for. Now spread that over 40 minutes.
Yeah. But,
pulling 80 boards.
Yeah. Jalen Poizer at the point looked pretty. He looked okay.
That's been my question with them, though.
Yeah.
Who's running the point? Because I know they want to get out and run.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Marvin made that statement early on in his hire, like, man, we're going to get out and run again. We want to get out and go back to being the running Rebels.
Yeah.
But they really didn't recruit the point guard. They really didn't get the trigger man, I think.
They had Jalen Poizer on the roster already, and Jalen played here last year. He's a sophomore, holdover from the Rice era, from Canada, really talented kid. A lot of people, when Dave Rice recruited him, when got him here, the thought was this was the point guard he always wanted when he recruited him over
okay.
here. That he wanted this Jalen to run his system because he was the perfect athlete for it. He can score from any part of the floor. He can attack on the dribble. He can hit a three from the wing. He can do all of it, essentially.
Right.
He's got the skill set for it.
Does he play good defense?
Defense needs work, but, you know, we'll get into defense because that was actually a big thing after the game. But, no, Jalen looked like the better point guard, I thought. He had four or five assists on the night.
Not bad.
Zion Morgan, who's also in the mix at point guard, didn't have any assists.
He's a point guard?
Yeah, he's supposed to be the point guard. So I thought Jalen, at least in the first exhibition, looked like he was going to be the guy to run the point so far.
Okay.
But like I mentioned, if a guy like Zion can really take command and start running it, or even like Clyburn's got the handle to maybe even you put him at point.
Right.
I don't know exactly.
And that's
mentally,
what I was, when you mentioned his size, that's what I thought. You know, okay, if he's this guy, he come in, he can create his own shot.
I looked at it. I could have his size off by
if
a couple
he can create
inches,
his own shot,
definitely.
Man, that'd be the type of guy I would look for. I like point guards that one are pass first, but if you could create your own shot, get to the lane and look to dish.
So he's 6'6". I undersold him a little bit. Chris Clyburn. So he's 6'6", but still, good size.
That's not bad, though.
Yeah, no. And he can, like I said, he's active.
That'd be
rebounds.
A matchup problem for people.
Yeah. But, I mean, like I said, who knows how his grasp of the offense, maybe that's why he's really not in the mix. But he's listed as a guard. But either way, I think Jalen, so far, is the guy. Obviously, they play again, New Mexico Highlands, on Friday.
My brother
the
went there.
Exhibition. Really?
My brother Quan went there for a little bit. So did Coach Evans from Centennial High School out here.
Oh, really?
He's a New Mexico Highlands guy.
Cool. Yep, they're coming to town. We actually have Coach Craig Snow on the show today. So,
from Highlands?
Yeah, from Highlands basketball. So we'll have him on at 4:30.
When's that game?
Friday. Friday the Thomas and Mack.
I think I may go to that one.
Yeah?
Yeah, you know, I'm a huge basketball guy. Like, really? Like, it's one of those things where football's my passion.
Yeah.
I play baseball. But, like, basketball is, like... Like, I'm all in on NBA. I'm a Laker guy, full disclosure, and I've been a Laker guy my whole life. Other than the Jordan era, I was a Jordan guy.
Yeah.
And so, even last night, I turned off part of the World Series to watch the Laker game, the fourth quarter of the Laker game. I was like, I want to see this.
Mm.
But I'm a big college basketball guy, and I've the full disclosure, other than North Carolina, which is my favorite basketball school, and then my close friend Kenny Anderson was at Georgia Tech, which actually pushed – the UNLV team with Greg Anthony, Larry Johnson,
yep.
George Ackles, Stacey Augman, and Anderson Hunt and them, all off the top of my head, mind you, I named them all.
Yeah.
They pushed that team into overtime. They're the only team to get close to beating them on their way to national title. Kenny actually hit the three or the shot top of the key to send it to overtime. I was a big UNLV guy.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Tark. I really thought, and his son actually coached at a junior college I would work out at in the offseason during baseball season down in California named Chaffee College.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big basketball guy. So I definitely want to check out, especially with New Mexico Highlands. I'll either go to there or I'll end up going to the Centennial Palo game because there's playoff implications high school wise for that. But, you know, I want to make a real quick announcement. We'll stay on basketball. At Inside the Rebels, like, you know, I was pretty much doing everything. I recently reached out on Twitter and on the Periscopes and the YouTube channel that we have, which you guys can subscribe to. It's at Inside the Rebels. I need a basketball guy. Mm. And I got some submissions, and I settled on Jeff Wadilove. I probably botched his last name.
Yeah.
It's like Wadilove.
Sounds right.
So Wadilove. So anyway, Jeff's covering basketball full-time for us at Inside the Rebels. I'm going to be doing some stuff as well, obviously. And he was at the game, and he actually sent me the recap, so I'm going to put that on the website and his introduction to everybody. So I want to welcome to the Inside the Rebels family. I may get him in here one of these days just to, you know, one of the games where we all are at, we can sit down and just, besides the football, we can talk about, you know, basketball or whatever. But back to what we're talking about. I'm interested to see, because the kid from Centennial, and I forget his name. Troy something.
JVT's going to look it up. Deciding here in the next week.
Yeah, on the 7th. He's deciding, and UNLV is one of the finalists. And I'm going to reach out to my guys over there, since I'm very tied into that school for a lot of very different reasons. Well, mainly because my kids go there, and I was coaching football up there.
Troy Brown.
I'm interested to see if he stays. I mean, he's got some pretty big offers. I think Oregon is one, right? Oregon, UNLV, I think it's Kansas, I believe.
I'm looking right now.
Okay, JVT's looking. But he's got big-time offers, and he's a big-time player. I mean, this kid could flat-out score. He can play. He's got the complete package. He'd be a huge get for Coach Menzies and that staff. And plus, he's local. So,
yeah, well, I don't know who's in his final, but at least ESPN's got him listed for offers from Ohio State, Alabama, Oregon, Kansas, Georgetown, Arizona, Cal, and UNLV.
So, you look at the name.
Oh, pretty good name programs.
Yeah, all Power 5 schools except for UNLV.
Yep.
I would love for him to stay home. If he stayed home, oh, my Lord.
Well, I know. That'd be great. I mean, and the cool thing with Menzies is, I mean, when Rice was here, obviously, the blue chippers were all over the place. Blue chippers up and down, always recruiting Steven Zimmerman, Chris Wood,
right.
You know, always trying to bring guys in that were high profile. A lot of people thought with Menzies it would fall off, and yet you have PJ Washington visiting and having him in his final five. Then you obviously mentioned Troy Brown, and then Baxter, who just came in, who was a top recruit as well,
right.
Who was over at South Florida, not Central Florida.
South Florida.
And when he ultimately decides not to go there, who swoops in but Marvin Menzies, and now he's on the team.
Right.
So, I mean, Menzies has been doing a good job. A lot of people were like, you know, these blue chippers are going to fall off. We don't want them anymore anyway. I mean, it's always good to have big names considering UNLV because that gets your brand out there. Menzies done a good job thus far in a short amount of time.
What about the kid that announced, and it's not Troy, it was somebody else. He's a four-star. I think he's a power forward. And he announced, like, this week that UNLV – was UCLA, USC, and there's another school.
I believe that might be PJ Washington.
I think it may be PJ Washington.
Over Finley Prep.
Yeah, he's another one that if they can, and I know Finley's a big time program too. Yep. You know, if they can land, let's say they land him in Troy, wow. I mean, that would be huge for the program, I would think. But I think he's taking an official visit.
Yeah. Kentucky, North Carolina, and UNLV are his final three.
Look at the group he's in.
Yep.
And here's the thing, when it comes down to it, and I think, I don't know, we've never talked about this. We talked about the Tina hire, you know, the whole how it was all FUBAR'd, in terms of the basketball coach. But, you know, realistically, Menzies is not a bad hire at all.
No.
I mean, is he the big name guy? No. He's from the Patino tree. I take that back. I digress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think he's from the Tarkanian tree. I don't know. But whatever it is, he's done a very, very good job, and he's highly respected. See, JVT's looking all this stuff up. Like, he's on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and his passion bucket overflows for UNLV.
He's actually – he was a Lon Kruger guy.
A Lon Kruger guy.
Yeah, when Lon was here.
That's not bad. I mean, Lon, and this is the same type of
and
rebuild.
And obviously played at UNLV.
Right. But this is the same type of rebuild, though. Than when Kruger got here. I mean, basically from the ground up. So, like I said, you know his passion bucket is overflowing for UNLV.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Defense sucked, but they'll improve.
Well, what's wrong, bro? Defense is effort.
Yeah, they'll improve. Mezzi's said they did. He actually used the word bad and then backtracked in the press conference. He was like, yeah, it was pretty bad. Eh, it wasn't good. That was exactly the way he did it. entertaining guy.
He's real personable.
Yeah, but defense wasn't great. I mean, with 8 points left, it was a 10-point game. Or 8 points left, 8 minutes left, there was a 10-point game. And dribble penetration was just, like, it was just wide open in the middle almost every single time. Kick out threes, and that's what really – they didn't even hit a lot of threes. That was a ridiculous part.
Really?
Yeah.
Expectations? What are your expectations for them this year? I know what mine are, but I want to hear yours first.
I mean, I think they're definitely going to be bottom half of the conference.
Yeah.
But top half of the bottom half? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think they're slated to finish in Blue Ribbon, which I just got it. So love that book, by the way.
Yeah, so you tweet that out.
I think they got him 8th or 9th, something like that. But I don't know. 6 is the ceiling? 7?
So how many wins? Overall, I don't care about conference.
Yeah. No. They got a rough non-conference schedule, man.
Yeah, what, Duke,
Kansas, at Oregon. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's going to make them better, though.
Yeah, in the long run, it will. I'll go with 13.
I was thinking high-end 15, but I'll say roughly between that. I think you'll get about 8 conference wins, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's being optimistic, I think. But I think they're going to be in a lot of games.
Mountain West cannibalizes on itself when it comes to conference play. I mean, everybody beats the crap out of everybody. And to be honest with you, Mountain West, since I started here, and just obviously growing up out here, just right. Following Mountain West conference play is actually extremely entertaining.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I'd watch it down in Cali.
Yeah.
I'd watch Mountain West games. I think they're on ESPN or ESPN2. I'd watch them all the time.
Yep.
I'd get into them. But, so
I'm excited. You know, regular season. I do basketball for the station here, too. So.
Right.
Always love doing it. I'm on the post game show after every single game. After the IMG broadcast, we go live with Rebel Extra. It's me and Bernie Fratto. So after every single game this year, we'll be live. We're looking for a location. We actually might be after every home game out at a location for a remote for the show. So
how are you gonna do? You have to leave during the game to go there?
Maybe. Yeah, like the last couple minutes or so, listen to the end of the radio. That's a little tough. To be honest with you, I never really liked last year when I did them.
Right.
I never really liked coming to the home games. Because, like you mentioned, you have to leave and miss it. And I used to live right next to the station, so I would just watch the games as many as I could at home, and then just come over right when they were over. But yeah, that's a little.
Yeah. You said he lived right next to the station.
Yeah, I used to.
The apartments right. Like,
No. These ones. There's ones a little further down.
Oh, I've seen those. I was like, those are like high end apartments.
No, but I used to walk here. It was like a 5-minute walk. Not even.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of watch, did you watch the World Series?
Yes, last night.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Epic.
I want to be a curmudgeon and be like, man, everyone's saying that game was great. Wasn't that awesome? It was a pretty good game. Why does his name escape me? He actually had a big single. He drove
Raji Davis?
Yeah, Raji Davis. When he had that 2-run shot, I went nuts. My girlfriend had no idea what I was – because the system works at home, right? I let my girlfriend have the computer, the TV with the sound. I just need to watch the game. I don't need sound.
Right.
And, you know, she's watching her telenovela. And I'm sitting here watching this, and he hits a 2-run shot, and I just go nuts. I'm jumping up and down because I was rooting for Cleveland the whole time.
Right.
So when he hits that 2-run shot and ties it at 6, I was so ecstatic. It was awesome. It was a good game, though. It was.
It's funny. I really didn't care who won.
I didn't really care either. I just like the suffering of Cubs fans.
See, what I didn't like is the bandwagon Cubs fans. I mean, everybody wants to be a Cubs fan now, and that's part of the problem I have with that. You know, if you're going to be a Cubs fan – be there when Ryan Sandberg and Mark Grace and Leon Bull Durham and Sutcliffe and Maddox.
But that's the way it works every
and
time.
Andre Dawson and Jerome Walton and Sean Dunstan. I mean, like, go back. Like, for me, and then you got guys like, oh, I've been a Cubs fan since when? Last year, since Theo got there.
With his Rizzo jersey.
He's got a Rizzo or a Chris Bryant jersey. Yeah. I mean, I get Bryant's a local dude, and he's a stud.
Out here, he's local, yeah.
Yeah, he's a stud. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brian is he's a dude. Him and Rizzo, that may be the best corner combination in baseball.
Did you see the vine of Bryant going around when he's fielding the final out?
No.
Oh, I got to show this to you right here. The biggest grin on his face. The second the ball is just trickling down,
he's
got the biggest smile because he knows, I'm just going to field this and we're about to win the World Series.
Exactly.
It was great. The play to slow motion. He's just, I know you can't see him. He's just like.
Then he almost slipped when he threw it. He slipped.
Yeah.
Watch when he throws it, and that's why the ball sailed, because his back foot slipped when he threw it, and the ball kind of took off. Mm. Now he started it low, and it was a perfect throw to Rizzo. Don't get me wrong, yeah. But for me, I didn't care who won. I'll say this though: the best player didn't have the biggest impact in last night's game, and that's Francisco Lindor for Cleveland. He was 0 for. I expected him to have a bigger impact in that game. Joe Maddon overmanaged the game. He overthought himself, and he does that in big games.
Well, he did that in the last – he started in game six when he put Chapman out there for God knows why.
He threw 100 pitches in three games. Mm. And I was watching the game in my room.
Mm.
And Rajee Davis comes up in the bottom of the eighth, and – I sat back, and I was jokingly, if you go through my Twitter, I started tweeting out Joe Boo things.
Mm-hmm.
And I tweeted like, I might as well just do it now or something like that with Joe Boo. And then the next pitch, Rajee Davis hits the home run.
Yeah.
So I started tweeting out different Joe Boo with different sayings. So I missed the last half inning. I had to go pick up some medication for my daughter who was sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in line at the drugstore in my car. And I tweet out another picture of Joe Boone, was like, oh, might as well do it again, dot, 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 might as well. And Rajee Davis hits the single to put him within one.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, now, if I don't do this again and the Indian fans see this, like, it's like I'm going to be Bartman all over again for him. And it ends up, you know, Martinez grounds out. It was, to me, the best World Series I've seen since the 1990 Twins-Braves World Series.
See, that's where I have my issue. I think last year's World Series, as far as entertainment, was more entertaining. I think the stories are better in this one.
With the Royals winning?
Yeah. And I didn't even like the Royals, but I thought this was more entertaining. Watching Mad Bum and how dominant he was throughout the whole entire series, coming in to close it out so they could win, like, all that stuff. I just thought that was more – I thought the baseball aspect of it was more entertaining to watch. But this had all the stories, had all the – just the energy around the series, and I think that's what helped out a lot.
And the baseball aspect of this one was through the roof. I mean, you had guys with intangibles like Chris Bryant, Rizzo, yeah. Lindor. Like,
no, I'm not saying it was a terrible series by any means. It was an entertaining series. I just thought, when I think about it, like when people are like, this is the best World Series of the last 20 years. Like, nah.
Okay, and full disclosure, we were talking with Mitch prior to doing this, and he brought up a very good point. When's the last time baseball's being talked about more than the football game the next day?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you didn't have that last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's a very valid point. At the end of the day, when you look at everything, this baseball game is overshadowing
The
NFL.
Is the baseball game overshadowing it, or is it the fact that the Cubs broke the stretch of 108 years?
That's all encompassing. That's part of it. That's part of it. The storyline for the World Series, I mean, you got 108 years and, what, 70, 80 years with the Indians?
Mm.
Now, here's the thing I find interesting.
68,
64? 68 since the last time they won. I believe 68. Cleveland, the city of Cleveland, watched more of the World Series than they did the Cavaliers World Championship.
What do you
mean? The number, the ratings. The ratings were high, and it was a lot higher in Cleveland nationally than the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Name another city. Because Cleveland, honestly, and I'll go as far as saying this, the Cavaliers are low man on the totem pole in Cleveland.
There's a lot of white people in Cleveland, huh?
It has nothing to do with race.
Lebitard.
Cleveland, the Cavaliers are three. The Indians are two, and the Browns are one.
Yeah.
If the Browns were to win the Super Bowl, that's the biggest story in Cleveland no matter what.
Of course. It's like UNLV winning a national title.
Well, yeah, you could equate it to that. But realistically, it's, you know, Cavaliers win a title. Okay, they got LeBron. They're supposed to. You know, really, it's LeBron. NBA doesn't let their biggest superstar not win a title. And I said that. The NBA doesn't
let... Oh, we're not going to get into this. Don't tell me it was fixed.
No, I'm not saying it's fixed, but I'm just saying the NBA doesn't let their biggest superstar not win a title. Name the last one superstar not winning a title in the NBA.
But to say that they're not going to let him implies that they have a hand in selecting the champion, and that's not true.
I disagree with that completely.
I'm not going to do this. I hate this.
I'm not saying it's 100%, but you're going to tell me that David Stern, when he was commissioner, was like, hey, Joey Crawford, hey, look, you know, Seattle's not marketable, and, you know, it's MJ, and his dad just died. You know, you may want to, you know, just keep a close eye on how tight Seattle plays defense on Michael. You're not going to tell me he never had those type of conversations?
No.
Oh, I'm crazy. I'm a big NBA conspiracy
guy.
Yes,
I know. That's why I love watching the NBA, but part of what annoys me about it so much is just the conspiracy cloud amongst all the fans. And I get it. The NBA did it to itself. It did. It really did.
Stern did it to him.
No, I get that. But, like for example, to, again, imply that the NBA had a thing, if they wanted, and this is what my argument is every time, if they wanted, I put in air quotes, okay, Cleveland to win a title, why not just let them sweep the series, however they would let it? Why have them go in a 3-1 deficit and risk it?
Oh.
By the way,
oh,
and in Game 7, so the NBA foresaw James hawking down Andre Iguodala in one of the most badass blocks of all freaking time.
That's the best block in NBA Finals history, maybe in NBA history. I'll go as far as saying that.
Yes.
That right
it
there.
It is the block. You know that, how they have the drive?
Yeah,
they
that's
have,
the block.
Yes, that's the block.
And I'll say this. That right there, because endeared me to LeBron. Prior to that, and even to this day, I'm not a huge LeBron guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge LeBron guy at all. I kind of think
LeBron.
He's disingenuous.
Oh, I love LeBron.
And
favorite player. He would kill MJ in one-on-one.
You're out your freaking box. You almost got me cursing. You almost got no way,
just
dude. Jordan is the best player to ever lace him up.
Just back him down every single time. Just take
Jordan would have let him. Are you kidding me? Jordan would talk so much head. LeBron is mentally soft.
Pack that shit.
LeBron
every
is softer
time.
Than drugstore cotton.
Oh,
okay.
LeBron would
mentally
kill him.
He's softer than drugstore cotton.
Score a point.
Oh, you're out. Now you're just messing. LeBron could have beat Kobe one-on-one.
Oh, he would destroy Kobe.
Oh, God, here we go. No, but seriously.
Fadeaway jumpers all day for Kobe. Get that shit out of here. LeBron would just take him to the hole every single fucking time.
You're crazy. Got you cursing again. But no, I'll say this. For me, when it comes to the NBA, I do believe that there is a little fixing involved. I'm just being real. I don't think Jordan stopped playing just to play baseball. I think he was suspended for a year. I think they caught him for gambling, and Stern was like, "We're not gonna put a black mark on your name because we're gonna bring you back." Mm. You know what I mean? I don't think that they foreseen them to Golden State to go cold in the final 4 minutes of the game 7. Mm. But I do think 3-1. Yeah, I do think they probably did something because do you want to know the reason why?
So I'm assuming you thought that when Oklahoma City was up 3-1 as well.
No. No, because that's not a good enough storyline. Last year's rematch.
So
the
you
finals,
thought that they had a hand in them coming back then?
No, I didn't. I, honestly, now I thought Oklahoma City would have beat Cleveland. I thought they were better overall. I thought Oklahoma City last year was the best overall team in the NBA from top to bottom, depth, talent, even better than Golden State. And I know Golden State won 73 or whatever, but it's 73-9, but no ring. Okay, they're not even the greatest team of all time. To me, it's that Jordan team or the Lakers team that ripped off 30-something plus games as well. But let me go back. All I'll say, the reason why the NBA would be cool 3-1 and they come back, ad revenue.
Well, I get all that. Yeah,
money.
I understand. But again, to act like they have a hand in the actual play on the court is silly. That's like I run a wrestling show, right? And one of the guys on the show, one of the hosts, it's a bartered show, and I just run the board, but one of the guys – when they talk to me off mic, because I'm the only guy in the room that really follows UFC a whole bunch.
Okay.
And sometimes UFC and WWE will mix in, especially when Brock Lesnar's fighting.
Right.
And he tells me every time, he's like, oh, you know, UFC is as big a work as wrestling. And I just stay quiet. I don't have time.
No, that's not.
No, I know, but that's what I'm saying. To me, when I hear the NBA's fixed, that's what I think of. I just stay quiet. I'm like, I can't get into this conversation.
We're going to have to go back to this conversation.
We might have
because
to.
Because this is good.
All
I think,
right, Aisha Curry.
I got no comment regarding Aisha Curry. Go take off some clothes, you nun. No, I'm just kidding. But I'll just say this. When it goes back to the World Series, congratulations to the Cubs, the true Cubs fans. I tweeted out last night, at somewhere up in heaven, Harry Carey's drinking a Budweiser with Ernie Banks and Ron Santo and yelling, holy cow. Mm. And he is just having a ball. And the long-suffering Cubs fans, Bill Murray included, you know what? Congratulations. You guys deserve it. And, you know, Theo Epstein just punched his ticket to Cooperstown. He's not going to be known as the greatest general manager in the history of pro sports.
All right, then before we sign off real quick, what are you watching tonight?
I am.
There's only one right answer.
Well, NBA.
Yes.
But I'm not watching the NFL game, but I will be watching my son's final high school game at Palo from 4 o'clock.
Yeah,
I'll be at Palo Verde, and hopefully he gets off a little bit. Had a big catch last week. Peanut had a big catch against Valley. I'll show you the picture. If the throw the ball was thrown better, he scores. But he had a good move to try to get to the end zone. Fell about 15 yards short. Mm. But it was a badass play by him. Before we sign off, I want to say if this is his last game this week, because rumor is Coach Evans at Centennial High School is going to be retiring as the football coach.
Mm.
And they have to win, and Shadow has to beat Legacy in order for them to get into the playoffs. If this is Coach Evans' last game, I have much respect for Leon Evans, the type of program he runs, the type of man he is, with the type of character that he has. And I know some people give him a bad name because he is harder on the kids. He's a little old school football coach, but he's making them better men. And I don't know if Coach Evans listens to this. He probably doesn't, but I know some other coaches do. Coach Evans is a hell of a man. I have much respect for him. I consider him a friend. And I hope they win and hope they get into the playoffs, because that Centennial team, if they get in the playoffs, they could do some damage. Offensively, they're up there with anybody in the state.
Cool.
So that's it for the Inside the Rebels podcast.
I'm watching Warriors Thunder, by the way.
I'll be watching that after the game. After the game, I'll be watching that, definitely. There's no NFL on my slate tonight.
No.
Here's the deal, guys. Tune in to the Inside the Rebels podcast every week right here on the Las Vegas Sports Network website, as well as InsideTheRebels.com. Follow JVT at me, JVT. I'm Joe Arrigo, at Joe Arrigo, or at Inside the Rebels. And subscribe to the YouTube page. I'm doing a lot of YouTubes and just talking about stadium and UNLV stuff. So for JVT, I'm Joe Arrigo. Check you next week at Inside the Rebels.